Welcome to Going In Blind. I'm your host, Zach Tidwell, and my guest this week is a 10-year Army veteran who went on to get a couple degrees and then found his own nonprofit, where he is now the founder and executive director of Veterans Exploration Therapy. But before we get into our conversation, I do have a couple quick announcements to make. Many of you may not know this, but there is a pretty wild story behind this podcast, and I've seen it sharing it, and my personal story can save lives. So I wrote a book about it, and I'm currently in my first of three rounds of editing with my editor. So I've got a couple of rewrites left to do, and I don't have an actual proposed release date for that yet. But to be kept abreast of any announcements that I do have regarding that, or to read a little bit about the story that I am talking about, you can go to my website at zachtidwell.com and join the mailing list while you're there. Finally, if you're someone who's been listening for a while or someone who's new to the show, please take a second and help it grow. The best way to do that outside of word of mouth is to leave a rating and review wherever you're listening, and then share these episodes around with another curious mind who needs to hear them. But without any further delay, here is Deke Letson. So I know you and I have talked about this a little bit, because just so people listening know, we met, I don't know, about a month ago through a group here in our hometown, and we just started talking about what you do. And I mentioned that the impact that services like your nonprofit have had on my life. And I've been very, since I lost my sight in 2019 and getting into all of this adaptive stuff, I've been really curious every time that I meet someone who works in the field. Typically it's my guides while I'm skiing or guides while I'm kayaking or whatever else I'm doing, just how they got into it. Because I didn't know any of this stuff existed until I needed it. And that's even with, you know, I have a younger sister who has Down syndrome. So I've grown up around disability my entire life, but I did not know that these kinds of programs existed until 6 years ago. So what was your entry into this world?
Well, it was actually completely by accident. I grew up in Glenwood Springs, and so the outdoors have always been a big part of my life. I joined the Army in 2003, and I got out in 2012, and I started doing everything the wrong way as a veteran. I started, I thought that I was drinking because we were partying and we got home from Iraq. And
that's what everybody thinks.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. And it didn't take long to realize that I was drinking to cover up a whole bunch of stuff. And I ended up causing a divorce. You know, I mean, I was just too big of a man to admit that I needed help. The whole process with child custody and the courts and everything like that just caused me to drink some more. In 2017, I went to a wedding in Panama, and what was supposed to be a fun occasion, it was my first time leaving the country since Iraq, and while everybody was inside partying and having a good time, I was patrolling the perimeter of the really beautiful property that we were staying at. 2018, I got a DUI, which was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. I lost everything. I lost my job. I was that veteran that was about to suck start a 9mm. And luckily, had some great friends that didn't allow me to do it. Well, you know, that were staying by my side and really trying to get me the help that I needed. Like I said, I lost everything. The only thing that I had was my GI Bill. So I walked into Red Rocks Community College in Lakewood, and I thought they were going to make me do something horrible, like be an accountant or something like that. No offense to those people, just not my jam. And they said, well, what do you love to do? And I said, well, I love the outdoors. And they said, well, you want to be an outdoor guide? We've got this outdoor professional degree right here. It's an associate's degree. And then they said, well, ever heard of wilderness therapy? And the answer was no, but I was signed up for both programs by the end of the day. And while I was going through school, I was going through therapy, of course, and I had a couple mishaps with school, just misunderstandings, real more than anything, just being an adult learner, you know, especially a veteran in a school environment. And I was telling my therapist about it, and she was like, hey, have you ever been treated for a TBI before? And I said, no, I haven't. She gave me the phone number to the Marcus Institute for Brain Health at CU Anschutz, and those people absolutely changed my life. They found out that the left side of my brain was no longer communicating with the right side of my brain anymore. And they can't fix the broken neurotransmitters, but they can create new ones. And so that was where they started to teach us how to relive our lives with the injuries that we had sustained throughout our military career, throughout our deployments. Had a couple blasts go off next to me while I was in Iraq, not to mention just doing dumb stuff while I was drunk, getting in fights and all that stuff. But then while I was at the Marcus Institute, this was over January of 2020, and all of my class, this was over Christmas break, all of my classes canceled, and there was a small business entrepreneurship class for the outdoor industry, and had no intention on taking it whatsoever. However, it was the only thing I could take with the GI Bill, and so I signed up for the class, and the first day of the class, they made me make a fake business, so I made Veterans Exploration Therapy.
No way.
Yes, yeah, so It's my school project that went horribly right.
You never hear about that happening, except for, you know, you hear weird, just almost, I guess, not unexpected, but underappreciated beginnings to things like that from like the occasional founder of a giant business that went somewhere. But usually stuff like this is pretty intentional and not just a byproduct of something. So was it as you were building out this mock business, you saw that there were legs to it and that it was a purpose that you were pulled towards?
Well, as I'm going through this class, you know, we had four or five different instructors for the class, and I got pulled aside by almost all of them saying, hey, you should actually consider doing this. And I made every excuse in the book for why can't I, you know, the class was over, I went out and got a job, and I tried to tell myself that I couldn't do something like this. And then, and every time I tried to pull away from it, I used to think that those people that said that the universe told me to do something were batshit crazy until it happened to me. And every time I tried to pull away from it, something would suck me back into it. And just one after another, well, as I was going along in the class, I was like, well, as they're teaching us business plans, as they're teaching us business filings, strategic planning, all of that stuff, I just said, well, what if I made a real one? What if I, you know, actually went and filed this with the Secretary of State's office? And so just putting one foot in front of the other, before I knew it, I had a real nonprofit. And we launched July 31st of 2022. So we just hit our 3-year mark.
Happy anniversary, man. That's cool. I get a couple things I wanted to ask you about here, and I promise we will pick back up here where we are leaving off, but a couple things came up when you were kind of giving your background that I wanted to ask you about. And
absolutely.
So when you were talking about that wedding, I think you said that was in 2018, and
yes,
patrolling the perimeter, was that you just because of your PTSD, like you couldn't sit still and just, it was too much noise and stuff, and so you were on high alert. Is that what was going on?
So this is where I realized that I had a problem, and I didn't know. You know, I knew that I drank too much before leading up to this and everything, but I didn't know. And people had told me that I had PTSD, but just to be perfectly honest, and, you know, I used to think that people used to use that as a scapegoat so that they could get a better, you know, VA rating or whatever. And think that it was real until I went to Panama, and there were big billows of smoke coming up throughout the city, and it was them burning their trash. We were actually in this really beautiful area, and it was over Valentine's Day, and so they were celebrating with like black hat fireworks. So, you know, there was pop, 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 pop going off. And I mean, years of therapy later, my therapist was like, well, no shit, you thought you were back in Iraq. Yeah. And so that's where, when I was patrolling the perimeter of the property, I mean, we were staying in this beautiful house. It was Pablo Escobar-esque. It had a pool room and everybody was having a great time. But like I said, I was outside patrolling the perimeter of the property, And that was where it hit me that the only time I had ever felt this much fear in my life was when I was in Iraq and somebody was literally trying to kill me, one way or the other. And so I put two and two together, and I thought that I was having flashbacks. Yeah. And come to find out, I was. I told the group that I was with that what was going on, because like my second deployment, I was just on a small 8-man personal security detail. And you know how it is. Those are your brothers. They know everything about you, and you know, they're there for you. And so I guess I was just looking for some sort of comfort, some sort of, I told the group what was going on, and, you know, I pulled them aside and I said, hey, you know, something's going on with me. I think I'm having flashbacks. This is the first time anything like this has ever happened. I don't really know what's going on. Well, they made me call the crisis hotline at the time, and I can only speak from my experience, but the other person on the other end of the line was completely worthless, made everything so much worse. And while they called the, or while I was calling the crisis hotline, they all snuck out the back thinking that I was going to, you know, blow my brains out or do something like that. So,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And so, actually the girl I was dating at the time, she was the only one who stayed with me. We had a couple days until, we flew out of Panama. And so she was the only one that stayed with me, and well, it really saved my life. Cause you know, like that was the first place that I kind of, and I can only speak for myself, but all I wanted was the pain to stop. Like I just couldn't get it to stop. Just my anxiety and everything was just raging through me and everything. And so, we flew back to the States a couple days later, and we thought that, you know, just being back in the States was going to calm me down. But that wasn't the case. We went to the VA the night that we flew in, and it was a Friday night. They gave me enough medication to get to mental health on Monday. And then when Monday rolled around, keep in mind, I'm an absolute shit show while all this is going on. I'm a 36-year-old man crying on my couch and can't get out of bed. And I have no idea what's going on. I just feel like I'm an absolute freak. But then when I showed up to mental health on first thing Monday morning, they wouldn't see me because I had never put in a claim for PTSD. Well, I didn't know that I had PTSD or something going on at the time. And so that's where it was really, really eye-opening. That it was like, well, no wonder veterans are blowing their brains out. You know, I mean, you're trying to get help, but you literally can't.
Well, after I literally did try and blow my brains out, when I was in the hospital still on life support, after I shot myself, my dad was trying to get me, because I was taken into a private facility. My dad was trying to get me transferred to the VA in Denver. They kept denying me because I had never been seen there physically, even though I was service connected and all that stuff. I'd never physically had an appointment there because I hadn't needed one. So they tried denying me, and he had to get the congressman involved to get me in there.
You are kidding me.
This shit happens all the time. And you're right. That's not why I was in the state I was in, right? I'm not a combat vet. I was in that state because of my own doing, but it was the first time that I needed the VA. That's what happened, right? Like at the highest possible level of need, pretty much. They're like, yeah, no, sorry. You haven't been seen here in person for an appointment. So, and luckily, you know, we'd had proof of me trying to get like stuff set up with my insurance through work and stuff like that. Everything just, I guess someone must have lit a fire under someone's ass at the VA through the, like one of, I guess, the congressman staffers or something, but they eventually got me in. But yeah, so that is not, I'm glad that that just came up right now so the people could hear that.
Absolutely. You should not have to fight for your care that you earned as a veteran. You know, like I'm sitting here right now with my mind just absolutely in shock right now hearing that, because, yeah, you know, like my story there, it took me 8 months to walk through the door of mental health. Like I'm suicidal. I can barely get out of bed in the morning because I'm crying. My anxiety is just absolutely raging. And yeah, it took 8 months to walk through the door. And see, that's just kind of where I don't think that this veteran suicide thing is all that hard to figure out sometimes. It's like, hey, if you give them purpose, if you give them the means necessary, like veterans are coming out and they're trying to get help. But when you run into an immediate barrier, like when you call a therapist and they get back to you 2 or 3 weeks later, it's like, well, no, when you're having a mental health emergency, you need help right now. You don't need it in a few weeks or a few months or definitely next year.
Yeah, so there's one side of that. Like, I wasn't seeking help, and I know I'm not alone in that. I think that's the not seeking help is what leads people down that path. So often, even you listening to your story, you didn't know, or you maybe at some level you knew that there was something going on, maybe not, but like you, whether you knew or not. And I think a lot of guys don't realize, like you didn't, that it's a problem. And I didn't realize that my stuff was a problem and I was just trying to hide it. Like, it's not realizing that it's as bad as it is, coupled with the fact that, yes, a lot of the time then if someone does make it to the point of trying to seek help before doing something drastic, then that is a pretty common situation where it is. And I don't mean to just, I have a hard time with, I guess, bashing on things like this where I don't have a good solution for it, right? Like, I guess I can identify issues, but if I'm not also posing a solution that's actually actionable, then I kind of need to get off the pot a little bit. But in my experience, at least with the Denver VA system, getting in the door for any sort of new treatment is always, that's where all the friction is. But once I've been in somewhere, whether it was mental health or the rehab unit, like where I was rehabbed from shooting myself, but also when I received like outpatient substance abuse treatment, all of that stuff was great. It was just, you have to fight, like you're saying, to get your foot in the door. And it's these crazy, crazy long cycles of you have to sit there and bug a provider and bug a provider or bug a provider's nurse over and over. And to get in contact with anyone, you have to sit on the phone for 30 minutes and stuff like that. Where if you're already at that point of despair, like you're talking about, and that's the barrier that you meet, then it is like, well, fuck it. I'm already at my wit's end. I don't have the bandwidth for this, and I'm already not in a stable place. And I think that has to push some people over the edge.
Absolutely. Well, you said something a minute ago about, you know, not liking to bash this stuff without having any kind of like actionable plan or anything behind it. And see, that's exactly what I'm trying to do with Veterans Exploration Therapy. That is literally what I'm trying to do. And, honestly, because, well, the Marcus Institute was the first place that taught me, you know, you don't have to be on a bag of medication anymore, but you do have to work on this. Like, you can't just quit your medication and think that everything's going to be okay. But there are other ways to heal out there, because I was that veteran that they just, you know, started pushing pills to. I was on about 30 different medications. You know, you're taking one medication to counteract the side effects of another medication. And, you know, and especially when I was going through school, I got to a point where I felt like my brain could go farther, but the medication was literally holding me back. And this is where the Marcus Institute for Brain Health was just so amazing and absolutely saved my life. is they taught us alternative means of healing. They taught us about yoga, tai chi, qigong, art therapy, music therapy. As soon as they were able to tell me that, you know, they ran their tests on me and they found out, like I said earlier, the left side of my brain was no longer communicating with the right side. I was no longer a freak anymore. And once you could figure out what was going on, you could also come up with a plan of action to correct it as well. And so like I said, I was going through this program over Christmas break, and then all my classes canceled while I was in school, and there was that small business entrepreneurship class that I started taking. And so that's where it struck me. I was already getting a degree in wilderness therapy and outdoor education, and there's already so many amazing things that just getting out in the wilderness and teaching people new skills and getting them to challenge themselves and push past their barriers does for you in the first place. And so it was like, well, why don't we just kind of combine the two? Why don't we combine like the stuff that we learned at the Marcus Institute and the stuff in the outdoors? And so what I'm trying to do now with Veterans Exploration Therapy is use adventure as an opportunity to get veterans and their families. Like, we really, really, really try to encourage veterans bringing their family members too, because I saw what I did to my family and I caused a divorce. You know, I only get to see my kids 50% of the time. And trust me, like, my kids have been in the other room and I'm having flashbacks. They don't know what's going on. Like, I'm still paying for the repercussions of that. But it's really easy if somebody doesn't have the skills backing everything to just say, nope, all right, I'm out. I've put up with enough of Deke. And then, you know, divorces or just end of relationships. And especially if there's kids involved, you know, the most dangerous person is somebody with nothing to lose. And so that's why if I can teach somebody to rock climb or go hiking or, you know, skydiving, dog sledding, you know, really, I'm trying to use whatever I can to get people off the couch and quit self-isolating and give them an opportunity to try something that they've never got the opportunity to do before, and then do it with their family, because it's not material possessions that bring happiness. It's experiences and memories that bring happiness. And especially with kids, you literally only get so much time. And so, yeah, if I can push these people into a zone where they're learning and they're challenging themselves and making new skills, learning new skills, making new memories with family members. That's just exactly what we're trying to do with the organization.
I love a couple things that you said. They're so big. And I guess first, earlier when you mentioned the crisis line, I was really bummed that you had a bad experience with it. I've only called them once and I've never had someone else tell me that, like, you're the first person that I know that's opened up to me and been like, yeah, I've called them too. My experience was good. They got me connected with the VA. Like, the night they had the VA follow up with me. So that bummed me out. But everything else that you just said with, you know, you touched on the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, specifically talking about you don't have to be on medications. And that, however, if not, that does not excuse you from doing the work. Because at the end of the day, even like, those medications are there to assist in doing the work and diminish the differences between the highs and the lows while you are doing the work. And that's, I think people forget about that a lot. And just even independent of the medications, the fact that you do have to do the work. And I love that you learned that and have brought that into what you're actually doing, because I think all of these experiences are awesome and they are a vessel for opening the door, at least in my experience, right? Like, these, they have always been a door opener for getting started with the work or kind of bringing. And I guess this is the first time I think that I've heard, outside of Wounded Warrior Project, people doing, like, an organization doing it with bringing the families to get involved too, because it is a whole, you are a unit. And even if you were the person experiencing and struggling with this depression and this post-traumatic stress disorder and everything else that you had going on, like, yes, your wife and your kids were there for that. And I'm curious if a lot of the guys and gals that you get coming through the programs are, when they come to you or when you guys first get connected, are in more of a dire state like that, where there is work that needs to be done with the family as a whole to kind of let them all heal from whatever stuff, however these issues have been spilling over into their personal lives outside of just, you know, the individual.
Well, and see, that's the beauty of this, because we get people coming in through all different walks of life. We get people who have been healing for quite some time and have been on quite the journey. But then actually most of the time we get veterans who haven't started their healing at all. You know, they don't know about these resources in the community that can give them help right away. And that's actually why I'm so open and vulnerable about what happened to me. Cause like, quite honestly, like I don't like necessarily like telling everybody that, hey, you know, I used to be an alcoholic and I completely screwed up. And, you know, it's not really, you know,
it's not a good feeling.
Like, yeah, every time I've said it in front of a crowd of people, like it still makes my stomach cringe and everything like that. However, every single time that I do it, every single group that we go out with and I start telling my story to, I get at least one veteran that comes over to me and says, hey, man, my anxiety's going like crazy too. Like I get all pissed off about this stuff too, or, you know, whatever the case may be. What did you do? And like, that is the very second that it's like, yes, I got you, you know, go over here, dude, go to the Marcus Institute. These people will square you away. They're amazing. Jefferson Center for Mental Health. These people are awesome. You know, just like where we met, Sober Dads, Rob Lilly. I love that group so much. And I love just being a fly on the wall in that group. I haven't had a drop of alcohol for 7.5 years. And sitting in that room, because you listen to all the stories of everybody going on around you, and you would think that the hand of God himself came down and touched these people and healed them. However, they just cut alcohol out of the equation. Like, they just quit drinking.
It is interesting. I went to breakfast with them yesterday, and that's the second time that I've met everybody, right? I met a couple different guys yesterday, but it is, somehow it has attracted a group of angels. Like, for the few guys that I've gotten to talk to on a deeper level past, like, hey, this is, you know, I'm Jim and this is what I do kind of thing. Like, it does tie back into the same thing you were just saying with when you're speaking and you share your story. Like, that's, even in an environment like that where none of us are there for something like that, there is so much power to someone owning their shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like with my guides, my people that are out on our trips with us, you know, I want to surround these people with leaders who are doing the right thing, because exactly what you just said right there, there is so much power in somebody that is leading from the front and doing the right thing. And especially, I heard somebody say one time, when you share your healing, you reach the ultimate level of healing. And, you know, I've just, for some reason, that's just always stuck with me, because it's like, yeah, man, I'd be selfish if I didn't share this with everybody else. If I didn't, you know, tell everybody else that, hey, you know, like, you don't have to keep shoving that pill down your throat and thinking that things are just going to change. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not telling anybody to stop taking your medication. Some people absolutely do need medication and everything. But just like you spoke to earlier, you also have to be doing the work behind it that's going to treat the root of that issue.
Yeah, and it's tough, man. I'm like you. I have the same view on the medications. They're absolutely an asset. There's a time for them. Some people may need them all the time, but like, I'm also a firm believer of kind of like, it sounds like the same approach that they took at the Marcus Institute of, if you can, obviously I'm not a doctor. This is not medical advice. I guess I will, instead of putting myself into weird territory here, I will say from a personal perspective, I've tried twice getting off of my antidepressants. I've both times, several months afterwards, I go in through a very intense bout of depression. But like, I just, this time I just went through a couple months of it, like heavy, like the worst depression that I'd had since the last time that I tried getting off of them. But I've been through it. And I think that's through the work over the years that I've done to learn the coping skills. Obviously, you know, I didn't pick up a Glock again, right? I was talking about this stuff and I didn't pick up a bottle again, and I got through it. Now I'm on the other side of it and I didn't get back on them. And I'm curious, okay, does that mean that there will be another window that just drops? Will these windows get less intense over time and less frequent the longer that I stay off of these? You know, but it's, you know, the other side of that is like, obviously there are some mental health disorder like schizophrenia and stuff where you're like, you have to be medicated. That's a different ballgame. That's not what I'm talking about. But like for you, it sounds like you got off of everything, at least the antidepressants.
Yes. And I did a lot of what you were just talking right there too. I went on these roller coasters of antidepressants and the VA would say, hey, try this out. You know, if you don't like it, come back in a month and we'll give you something else. You know, we'll try something else. And so the Marcus Institute was the first place that we started weaning down my antidepressants, but then we also started doing alternative types of care like acupuncture, massage therapy, yoga, art therapy, you know, really, really ensuring that I'm taking time out of my day to actually go through with these steps. You know, one of the things that when I was on antidepressants, and I was also drinking at the time, but
it's a horrible mix. I've done that too, but that's bad news.
That's just it right there. It is bad news. And either that they don't tell you that, or in the long list of, you know, the 50 page list of side effects that this pill gives you that the VA issues us, like who actually reads that freaking thing of side effects or whatever. But yeah, that's just it right there, is you're not taking like an aspirin or something like that, that gives you an immediate fix when it comes to like pain or something like that. You're taking something that has to build up in your system over time, 30 to 45 days. Us Americans, we want that instant gratification. So when we don't start feeling something right away, we either stop taking the medication. Like I've got a TBI. I would forget to take my medication some days. And then also, you know, just like we were talking about a second ago, I was drinking with it. And so that's a bad combination. If you stop taking these antidepressants, these medications that take time to build up in your system, you know, they can throw you into a mental health emergency. And now all of a sudden you just jumped off this medication cliff and these antidepressants are literally throwing you into a mental health emergency. And then at least in the military, or I think just a lot in America, well, the Coors Corporation teaches us to, when you're having a bad day, you know, go have a few drinks and it'll all be better. However, alcohol is a depressant. And so you're trying to treat depression with a depressant. And that's where I really think that it clashes. You know, all it takes is, you know, feeling sorry about yourself, going in and out of these waves of up and down, being on antidepressants. And yeah, one night of feeling bad about yourself while you're on the downside of one of these waves, I think it's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. It's taking people's lives. Like it doesn't set you up for success. And there's another thing that you touched on earlier. I think you said you were on like 30 different medications. I have another friend who is on here. He runs a veterans nonprofit. His name is Doug Grayson's, and he was on like pretty early on in the show, but he, like you, was on a bunch of different medications from the VA, but like this, there's a disconnect because it is such a large organization and everything is segmented that, you know, medications from one doctor sometimes aren't taken into account or medications from Dr. A aren't being taken into account when Dr. B is prescribing meds at their clinic, and then Dr. C isn't taking those into account. So all these meds have these different interactions, and he ended up he was basically so drugged out of his mind from a collective prescriptions from different doctors that he ended up with a traumatic brain injury, just had to have his leg amputated because he had drop foot from this freaking brain injury. They just like, again, not an unheard of thing that goes on here in all of these You know, especially when it's something like that and you are playing with the chemicals in your brain. It's very, very touchy.
That's it. Absolutely. Yep. You are playing with these chemicals in your brain. You know, you're only as, and plus it's only as good as the doctor prescribing it behind it too. You know, like doctors can make mistakes too. They can prescribe the wrong medication. I remember one of the medications that I was on, my ex made me stop taking it and made me go to the doctor and get something else prescribed because I don't remember my dreams for some reason, but I was all of a sudden able to remember them. And yeah, it was not a good situation.
They weren't good dreams.
No, yeah. No. They were not good dreams, brought those nightmares right back. And I was waking up in the middle of the night screaming. I was just an absolute terror to be around during the daytime. And I wish I could cite this a little bit better than the director of nursing at a very prominent medical institution around the Colorado area told me. But she told me that the VA prescribes more medication than any other medical institution on earth. However, they only see 1% of the US population. And that stat just absolutely blew my, just blew my mind a little bit, because it's like, well, wait a second. This just seems like that's what they're trying to do, is just pump medication down us. As opposed to, I've been reading a couple of really great books lately. One being The Body Keeps the Score, where it speaks specifically to where medication is absolutely needed when it's needed, but you also need to be working on that root cause, just like we've spoken to. But also, when you take purpose away from somebody, that's kind of where I feel like 100% disability for some of these veterans is causing a lot of damage. I'm not saying that it's not needed or anything like that. I'm just saying once you take somebody's purpose away from them, that's also when our mind is our own worst enemy. You know, if you don't have to go to work anymore, if you don't have to, do your day-to-day routine because, well, now you've got the money to do it and now you can just sit on the couch and not do anything. Well, now they've taken away your purpose. And so another great book that I just read was Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Yeah.
Logos therapy, sense of purpose, sense of meaning.
And for people who don't know, he was in a concentration camp during the Holocaust and came out of that and wrote this book. And it's a pretty seminal book. It's a lot of people know what that book is. Like Spin's been through some things and came out with some very, I guess, powerful perspectives on things, specifically on purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so just going back to, you know, veterans exploration therapy, you know, and instead of just bitching about everything that the VA is doing and or not doing, and, that's exactly what we're trying to do as an organization, is give veterans and their family members purpose again, you know, give them a reason to wake up tomorrow, show them that there's a reason to wake up tomorrow, give them the skills necessary to go out and make these memories with their families and, you know, and we very loosely word families too, because we all learned in the military, you don't have to be blood to be family. So, you know, that's why, like, hey, if somebody's got a really good friend that they want to take on a trip with us, they are more than welcome to. We just require that friend be that 3 a.m. buddy for them. You know, that person that's just going to pick up the phone when somebody is having, you know, when you just need to talk, when you just need somebody to be there for you, who's not going to be judgmental, who's not going to call the cops on you, you know, and all that stuff. And
a lot of times that's all it takes, right? I mean, whatever bad place that person is in, like, and it's not like that one call that night is going to fix the problem. Like I have a friend and her husband who were like that for me while I was trying to get sober, right? And it was just, you know, sort of for a long period of time, like they were my 3 a.m. call. And it just, it's again, like you said, it's the no judgment and specifically someone that you trust. And I think that's people also lose that. And I think this is a powerful thing that you do in emphasizing that is, yes, it is obviously advantageous and very helpful to have a professional to talk to, but if you don't have the ability to do that or are not ready to, that person that you trust, that 3 a.m. buddy that you were talking about, can have that same power for you. Yes, they don't have the expertise to dissect what's going on there and maybe teach you some of those strategies, but there's so much can come from just opening up about that stuff and talking through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always tell everybody there's only two things that you can do wrong when it comes to this stuff. You know, number one is cram it all down and, you know, deep down inside and never talk about it. You know, because it will come out and it'll usually come out explosively and in a very bad way when you least want it to. And the other thing is, you know, drinking or using substances to try to cope with it. You know, I'm not saying don't go have a good time or anything like that, but I am saying that, well, just like we spoke about earlier, you know, like, hey, drinking, I'll be the first person to say, like, oh, I know how good it feels. I know how good it feels at the end of a day, especially after you've had a crappy day, to, you know, have a couple beers or drink a glass of wine or whatever. But, you know, this is a marathon we're running, not a sprint. And so when you're trying to treat depression with a depressant, it's going to clash.
Yeah. But I want to pick your brain more here on the purpose stuff, because you've touched on it quite a bit. And I'm a firm believer in that, but you did. I guess I have one question here first, because you had mentioned in these benefits taking away people's purpose, and I don't, taking that, you know, in a literal sense, I don't necessarily agree with that. And so I want to ask you about it, because I think it has the potential to, but also, you know, like, at some level in all of these things that we've talked about, and but especially in this one, and this is also a subject that comes up, whether it's veterans on disability, whether it's civilians getting Social Security disability, whether it's people talking about this idea of universal basic income in the future, if that ever becomes a thing, that this purpose is taken away. But like, with all of that, And with all these other things that we've talked about, like even just helping yourself to try and get out of one of these holes and speaking up and telling someone that you need help, like, the individual still has agency in these situations, and we can't ignore that. So I get, in respect to what you mentioned with that taking away someone's purpose, do you mean it literally in the sense of like, just because you don't have to work, then like you can't, like that, or is that a trend that you're seeing, is where people lose their purpose because they don't have to work and they aren't continuing to push themselves? Or how do you see that presenting in your work?
So you did say, okay, bunch of things there. And I don't always articulate myself best, and maybe what I should have said in my experience, you know, and just like the friends that I've witnessed and everything, because you're 1,000,000% right. You absolutely have to take agency. You absolutely have to do everything. I've just personally seen veterans sit there and say, all right, I've got my 100% disability. You know, it's almost like it's almost like the lottery, or I don't know. I shouldn't say that either.
You get what you're saying, though. Yeah.
Bad way to put it. But, you know, and then they quit their jobs and they have lost their sense of purpose. And then I find them, you know, drinking their sorrows away. They're, you know, every night what they're doing is they're just partying. They don't have that sense of purpose anymore. I definitely should not have said that with every veteran.
No, I didn't mean it like that either. So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it sound like that. I wanted to get you to expand on that a little bit more. Yeah,
and I think that's just it right there. I think that veterans, as soon as they get that 100% disability, sometimes, and in some situations, they say, oh, great, cool, I can go do whatever I want. And it's like, no, you still need to have that sense of purpose. You still need to go out and you still need to try to be the best veteran that you can. Still try to be the best person that you can. This is healing is a game that's every single day, 24/7. And so I don't know. I guess that's just what I try to do with the organization, is at least have some sort of sense of purpose.
Yeah. Do you feel like this is, I mean, when I hear you talk about it, it seems like this is now your purpose. And because I know this is, you're doing this full time, right?
Yes, this is my full-time job. I am on 100% disability. And yeah, and so actually, if I were not able to, I would not be able to do this, just because, yeah, I've got three kids. I live like a senior citizen on a... And well, see, that's just it right there is, you know, yeah, I could, you know, just living, just not being able to afford vacations and stuff like that for my kids and stuff like that. Just had to make some sacrifices to get the organization going and everything like that. But yeah, so.
And that's why I had asked about the agency thing, because not that I knew you were on disability. I also get it. And I work fucking hard, and it sounds like you do too. And that's where I was like, okay, that's, you're the example of you still have to take this into your own hands. And that's why I was asking. But it looks, I mean, I was on your website. You guys have been doing some super cool stuff. How'd you organize getting guys to go, like, well, it was diving with the sharks in the Denver Aquarium?
Yes. That is one of the super cool events that we do. Well, and just like I said, it's try to come up with, well, really whatever my little imagination can come up with to get vets off the couch. And so Scott over at A1 Scuba and Travel, he's one of the owners over there. He's a Air Force veteran himself and really amazing person. They run the aquarium programs over there. And reached out to him and said, hey, what would you think about taking some veterans shark cage diving? Well, actually, the first event that we did with them was snorkeling in the aquarium. And there's two different tanks, shark, and the other ones are stingrays, all kinds of tropical fish and everything like that. But yeah, they give you a behind the scenes tour as you go in. You get to spend about 30 minutes in the water with either the sharks or the stingrays and eels and everything like that. But then what we really try to do as an organization is, yeah, this is a really cool event and everything, but we really try to teach them that it's our fears inside us that hold us back. And so pushing past your fears, once you can push past them, you can show yourself that, hey, it really wasn't that bad at all. And so, you know, like going and getting help may feel, you know, incredibly intimidating, like shark cage diving or jumping out of an airplane. But you can still do it in a safe and controlled manner.
That's, you know, really neat. So you use that as a way to extrapolate a lesson into helping drive growth in other areas of, hey, that was terrifying, right? Are you also terrified to speak up? Go do it. Like,
exactly. Yeah, like rock climbing is a perfect example of this, and we try to do this on all of our events. But rock climbing is terrifying to people, and I'm one of those people that used to say nope, that's a whole lot of nope, not gonna get me on the side of that cliff, until well, I was getting my degree in outdoor education and all my friends did it. And then they taught us about the safety zone, the challenge zone, and the danger zone. You know, the safety zone is where we like to stay in as human beings every day. And we like it because it's comfortable. It's safe. For the most part, we know that we're not going to get hit by a bus. The challenge zone is where... It is where I'm trying to get all of our participants, you know, is trying to step out of the ordinary. And this is where growth happens. This is where, like, you start learning as a human being. And, you know, I'm not saying let's get on the side of El Capitan and go free climbing or anything, because that would throw us into the danger zone where it would be a traumatic experience. But rock climbing, it teaches you to trust in others. You know, all of us are trying to climb these mountains by ourselves, but you have to learn that there's got to be somebody on the other end of that rope to catch you when you fall. Because we do fall, you know, everybody falls.
Constantly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a hell of a lot easier when you've got somebody right there by your side catching you. And then that's where these family skills come in. You know, hey, when you're having a bad day at home, you know, you may just need your partner to pick up the slack a little bit here, and, you know, vice versa. When they're having a bad day, pick it up for them. And so, yeah, that's what we're trying to do as an org.
I didn't even think about it in that capacity. It was interesting because when I was looking into some of your events, I noticed you had partnered with Team River Runner, and I was thinking about it that specifically as you were talking through some of these other things. And like, I thought something, at least I think in touching on the trust side of all of this, you know, that's very military. That is also, there's camaraderie in that, which is very kind of hits back at the military thing. But when you're doing this with other veterans, it feeds into that too. And I think that's an interesting, there's an extra layer of trust there when it is just because of that. Even when you haven't met, it's that camaraderie that is just there from knowing someone else is a veteran. But I hadn't even thought about it. Bringing that into the family dynamic, I would imagine you've seen some pretty drastic changes when you've had repeat customers that are coming with their families, right? That are in terms of growth over time and getting as a bystander to see them getting closer through some of this stuff.
Oh, dude, we do these programs with Jefferson County and Denver County Veterans Treatment Courts. And of course, we always try to let them bring the families whenever we can. And we did an intro to rock climbing class at Movement Climbing and Fitness in Golden. And one of the guys brought his two kids. And by the end of the class, he flat out said, he was like, well, looks like we found our new family sport. And then it wasn't just talk either. You know, when I went in there a couple weeks later, you know, he's in there on his own time with his two kids climbing. And I mean, they had looked like they had been doing it for years and years as opposed to just a couple months. And so, yeah, it was just, it's so awesome to be able to see the growth, to see repeat customers coming back over and over again, because that's exactly what this is. We're trying to create community here. We're trying to create a place where people can come and make new friends and grow and everything. You know, I know that we're not going to be able to keep everybody, and you know, we've got about a 50% retention rate where some people just find out like, hey, this is not for me. However, we've got some amazing resources in the community. You know, if the outdoors isn't your thing, great. You know, what about music therapy? What about art therapy? What about, you know, farming? You know, there's so many, what about horses? There's so many great organizations out there. And that's the last piece that we try to do with the org is try to get veterans and their family members to the proper resources in the community that can either give them clinical help, or just like I said, if the outdoors aren't your thing and art is, cool. Well, we've got some great people.
That's really neat. And the community aspect of that, you know, that develops over time, more of those 3 a.m. phone callers that you can have, right? That's another crutch you can lean on. If you've been seeing the same guy and his family for 6 months coming, you know, at intermittent events and stuff like that, that is so, and I think that's another thing that people are missing a lot of just in general, like not just veterans specifically, is just, you know, I've struggled with that, not having a sense of community. And when you find that, it's probably part of us being tribal creatures. Like we need that. But that is, I think that's another thing. It seems like you have a very whole picture approach to what you're doing.
I'm doing my best. Like I said, this is still a school project that went horribly right. And, you know, like I never thought I'd be an executive director or anything like that. But what was the word you just said a second ago? I'm going to mess this up. Said something to the effect of tribal approach. You know, like, you know how it is when getting out of the military is like getting out of high school. You have your close-knit group of friends. However, just as time goes on, you know, people have kids, they get married, they move. There's a number of different things that could go on. And, you know, and then before you know it, like I've been out, I got out in 2012. That was 13 years ago now. There's only a handful of people from my old unit that I still talk to. And are they close? No. Proximity wise or anything like that. And so just bringing that community back, just exactly what you were talking about. Give these people that 3 a.m. buddy. Get them recreating with another family that does this, that likes to do the same things as well. And, you know, just let everything go. Let them take it from there and gain those friendships and everything. So, and then not only that, too, we're giving them a constructive way of doing it. We're not like going out to the bars and saying, hey, you know, here's your new drinking buddy or anything. It's like, hey, believe it or not, here's your new exercise buddy, because rock climbing actually takes it out of you quite a bit physically.
Yes. And I think that's a smart move, right? I get drinking with people is a blast. Having good drinking buddies is fun. But like, I do think in an environment like that where the goal is healing, I am a fan of, which I don't know, I guess as I'm talking out of my ass as I'm talking right now, but like it doesn't bother me to be around it. But I do think there's a very fine line between events slipping into, okay, I'm really here because I want the booze fest after we get off the rock wall, or versus I'm here to climb and meet people, you know? So I think that's I keep liking what I'm hearing here with what you're doing. It's just, it's so cool. Is it, I know you're a one man team in terms of day-to-day operations, but do you have volunteers helping you put these events on and stuff like that?
I do. Okay. I have amazing team of volunteers that help me out with these outdoor ops, with my outdoor operations. I've actually got two of them out on a trip right now with National Sports Center for the Disabled. They did a veterans camp, which consisted of whitewater rafting, mountain biking, hiking and archery. And actually there would allow me to have a personal life myself, and, you know, be able to be on this podcast right now. And still I have my kids this weekend and everything. So I have an amazing team helping me out with that. I've got a board of directors, of about seven people, and they are working tirelessly to bring in money to this organization, because none of this stuff is free. And then I also have an amazing COO, Shay Curtis. Her and I meet every Monday, and she works tirelessly, doesn't make a penny for what she does. And she's a civilian too. And she had a really good friend who was a veteran who committed suicide. So that's why she is involved with our org, and just couldn't be more blessed to have her.
I hate that that's what got her there, but I mean, she sounds like a great fit for the mission because of that.
I'm with you. And, you know, there's been 140,000 plus veterans who have committed suicide since 2001. And so there's a lot of people out there who, I saw a stat, Guitars for Vets put out a stat the other day that said, for each suicide, 131 people are affected. And, you know, that's what kills me is, you know, like when somebody commits suicide, and hey, please correct me where I'm wrong, because hey, I'm wrong all the time. But, you know, it just sure does feel like you're passing you're passing all your depression onto others. You know, you're not fixing anything. You're passing it on to others. And so,
yeah, I mean,
just so many that are affected by it.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong there. It is. It's hard, man. You know, you don't, by the time you're at that point, you're not in a sane state of mind, obviously. Like, it's, if you think that the answer, if you stop and look at biological creatures, everything that we do is self-preservation first and then trying to spread our genes. Like, all of our behaviors come down to that. Any creature on this earth, that is what's going on, any living organism. And it's, when you reach the point that you think like the one way out of this is to fly in the face of all that behavior, you're going against the programming that is in your brain. Like, I just think you've surpassed that point of rational thought. And I know, like, for me, and I'm still here, but my attempt did pass on a lot of hurt to other people. It's when you're at that point, you don't see that. It's like you said earlier, all you want is for the pain to go away. It is this what seems like, and seems like being the key phrase here, it's unescapable despair. It is despair to its fullest extent, where there is no, in your head, there is no hope or of any sense of relief from this. And it's, you know, in, I wasn't seeking help. But in my head, I was like, you know, I've done everything I can. Nothing's getting better. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And I would imagine that's where most people that have reached that point, and those who aren't lucky enough to be on the other side of it and talk about that, they're in that same spot where there's your scope of the world has gotten so narrow because of the pain that you're in, that you do not see anything else except this is my break glass in case of emergency thing. You know, I decided 4 days before I shot myself that I was going to shoot myself. I was totally sober that night, and I cleared my gun out and held it to my head, and that's when I knew. And I felt relief. That is all I felt that night, was relief that, okay, there is a way out of this. And that's fucking crazy. That is an insane way to think. And again, I was not under the influence of anything. I was not on any medications, no alcohol, no nothing.
Oh, wow.
And I was drinking the night that I shot myself 4 days later. But so, I don't know if that's one of those things where it's like, okay, if I was sober that night, would I have gone through with that? I don't know. And I'll never have the answer to that. But my point is, I reached that point under what, other than the depression, was a clear state of mind. And so I agree with what you said of it is passing that weight of that burden of your depression onto others. It's not even a semblance of a thought in your mind when you're at that point.
Can I ask you a hard question and a real question?
Go for it.
Why did you do it?
I think this is interesting, actually, because there's a long story to why I got there. We can go through that if that's what you're asking, but I think you're asking legitimately, like, why did I do it, right?
Yeah.
I just don't think... So I was definitely a functional alcoholic by the time that I was at that point. I was going to school full time and working full time and was successful in those things. But I was getting hammered after everything was done for the day most nights. And I think, so I was adding the depressant to my depression. I don't know how much of it was that. I was definitely too proud to speak up because I thought it was weak to speak up. And outside of it, like, I know where I was at mentally. I just logically, I don't know that there was I don't even know that night on the 27th why I decided that was the night. But my wife had cheated on me on my second deployment shortly after I came home, and I tried making it work with her. It didn't work. I was in a motorcycle accident and got a traumatic brain injury from that shortly after I finally separated from her. And that was in March of 2018. And for that next year, that's when I struggled with depression. And that's also when I started self-medicating with alcohol. And so it was the combination of the two. And I don't know what the final decision point was in going through with it. I really don't. It was just, I felt fucking hopeless. Just in any way you can imagine that word, it was just, I was miserable all the time and was apathetic about absolutely everything. I was trying to still force myself out of the house to do the things that I loved, like going snowboarding or taking my dirt bike to the racetrack. And I would load all my gear up and drive a couple hours up to the mountains to go snowboarding and be like, man, I still don't want to be here. And I would just sit in my truck for a couple hours and then come home so that it looked like I went snowboarding. And it was so I think a lot of it was it was the self-medicating. It was also the inaction that I took. Again, I thought because I was forcing myself to do those things that I was taking action, but I wasn't, because I wasn't speaking up about any of it. And that, you know, when it boils down to it, it was like, there's not really a clear line there. I obviously by this rambling answer, I don't have a clear answer for myself. I just know that I reached that point where I wasn't seeing clearly and decided, and that was it.
Like, you've said so many things right there that have, you know, in my mind, just struck a chord, you know, self-medicating, you know, just being to the point where, okay, so once again, I wish I could cite this a little bit better than my psychology teacher told me. However, when I was getting my degree in in wilderness therapy, my psychology teacher for one of my classes, she said, hey, Deke, a mental health emergency is just like getting a cut on your arm. You know, when you get a cut on your arm, the white blood cells rush to the scene of the crime and they try to fight off any infection that are coming into your body. Well, when you're having a mental health emergency, your brain is doing the same thing. Your brain is just trying to stop the pain as quickly and fast as it knows how to. Unfortunately, your brain is a muscle and your brain can be wrong too. Ask my ex-wife. I'm wrong all the time.
She said, so, well, and then also, you know, like when you're having these mental health emergencies, your brain is not thinking logically either.
Your lizard brain is taken over and you're not thinking rationally. And that's why, like, in survival situations, you see people who have stripped down completely naked in the middle of the winter time and they found their dead body, you know, 50 yards later. Well, it's because their lizard brain has taken over and it's not thinking correctly. And so that actually led me to make another acronym, because we don't have enough of those in the military.
Military acronym, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, one of the things that we try to teach everybody in my org is embrace the suck, you know. And I'm sure I'm going to get some sort of trademark infringement somewhere. You know, this is just because, like, when I was going through my stuff and it took 8 months to walk through the door of mental health at the VA, you know, I found out that there was absolutely nothing for the right now when it comes to a mental health emergency. And so I made this acronym, Embrace the Suck. Suck being, you know, stop, recognize that something's going on. You understand that these are perfectly normal reactions that people who have experienced trauma have, you know, are going through. You're not a freak. You're not anything. This is normal. C, change your scenery, because obviously something's triggering you. But K, most of all, know that you're freaking loved. Don't fix a temporary problem with a permanent solution. And yeah, and so.
Please tell me someone has told you that scenery does not start with a C.
That is, yeah, no, scenery does not start with
okay.
a C.
I just wanted to make sure. And at first I was like, is he trying to tell me he came up with embrace the suck? Like,
no.
Okay.
C is change. Yeah.
Change your scenery.
Change
your situation.
I missed that. I'm so sorry.
Nope, we're so good.
I'm a dumbass.
Nope, I have those moments regularly too. It's like, oh crap, this has been on. I can't tell you how many times I've social media posts and will have misspelled like something like the or ridiculous. It's like, how did I do that?
Oh, it's a fun one, but it's a great point. And I think, you know, even what you're psychology professor told you was basically the same thing I was saying, that you reach a point of insanity. And obviously I was talking at a different end. She's talking in the acute, you know, and I was really my stuff or what I truly believe that is that place that people reach is on the other end of that road. But it is, you're not thinking rationally. And that's why I think, I still don't have there's not one thing I can point to where it happened. There's that series of things. And I know that path, but that was a long timeline. And it is, but it sounds, I mean, I'm guessing here between sharing your story and even interactions. I know you've done, I think when you sent me your email, I know I had said you'd done more than 80 of these programs at this point. I'm sure it's more now, but either in through you speaking or through you doing these events and speaking with people that you've helped transition someone from I'm on the cusp of that irrational thinking into, okay, now I see a path forward. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that people don't see on the surface is the people reaching out to the organization on the backside of it, whether it be, veterans who are in crisis when it comes to mental health emergencies. We've had veterans that are experiencing domestic violence situations and need to get out of their situation and helping them find resources for it. And so I guess there's a whole dark side to the organization that a whole lot of people don't see, staying up and having these conversations with friends. I've got, she's turned into one of my best friends in the world. She is the spouse of a veteran who committed suicide, and they've got 4 kids together, and it was a big ordeal. And she knew that when she got off the phone with her husband that it was going to be over. She had to tell her kids that it was a police standoff. Maybe I'm telling way too much. However, just like being able to have some of these conversations with some of these people on the back end of, why life went this direction, is just something that's completely humbling. And just being able to be there for these people and also get them to the proper resources that can help them too is, just kind of like going back to what one of the many, many things we've spoken about a while ago. It's like, I didn't mean to end up here in this space, but this is where the universe has put me. And this is, I know a lot of people go their whole life without finding their life meaning, but I've been lucky enough to find it at 43 years old. I know what I'm supposed to be doing for the rest of my life. And it's working in this space and working with veterans and their family members. And, I can't cure the world. I can't solve all the world's problems. But what I can do is, put one foot forward every single day and try to make it better for somebody else, try to keep fighting my fight and making my family better every single day and, just driving on.
And that's so beautiful. It just, you can hear it when you talk about it, but it's also when you stop and think, you're only a couple of years in here. Like, you're just getting started, but you're getting after it. And it's so, I'm so excited to see where this goes. I just met you, but I'm not going anywhere. So you're going to be stuck with updating me on this stuff. And it's just, we've touched on purpose quite a bit during this. How can someone else is going to hear this and maybe have the thought that there is a sense or another source of purpose might be getting involved either as a participant or as a volunteer? How can they do that?
Please reach out to me personally or through the website. There's a few links, vetxtherapy.org, V-E-T, the letter X, therapy.org, or my email, deke@vetxtherapy.org. We are always looking for volunteers. But along with that, though, too, I want a leader if you're going to volunteer for us, too. I don't want somebody that says, do as I say, not as I do. You know, I want somebody who's out there leading from the front and can show these veterans that, hey, there's other ways out there to heal and are doing the right thing on their personal level as well, as opposed to going out to the bar and getting wasted and just doing all the wrong things, you know, smoking crack, whatever the case may be. No, like, I don't want that.
No, man, I love that. And I think, you know, based off of everything that we've talked about here, if someone's still listening and they hear that, I think this will attract that kind of person. We've talked about some heavy stuff. So I don't think someone who's hearing this right now would have stuck around that long if they weren't along those lines. So I appreciate you coming on, man. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you want to discuss or plug or throw out there? I'll have links to your stuff in the show notes. What else?
Zach, I just hope that you do more than let me update you. I hope that you come out on some of our events too. And,
I want to. I totally do.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that we really try to do is make everything as accessible as possible. Even shark cage diving, you could be a complete no use of any of your limbs. And we can get you in and we can get somebody diving safely and with an instructor and everything. We're a small organization, so we're not perfect. We don't have tons and tons of funds for everything, but being accessible to everybody is one of the things that we really strive to do. And if we can't do it, we can also suggest an organization, another organization that can make it happen as well too. So, but as it comes to anything else, I really don't think so. We have really hit on a bunch of things and just beyond thankful for having me on today.
Yeah, I'm thankful you're willing that even though I can't see the sharks coming, I'll still be able to feel them biting my fingers. So making it inclusive for me, that's pretty cool, dude. I appreciate it. But I'll have to follow.
Try to keep the fingers intact and everything.
Yeah. And I just, thanks again for coming on, man.
Absolutely. Dude, it was a pleasure to meet you a few weeks back and looking forward to keeping this friendship going.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks everyone at home for listening to another episode of Going In Blind. Before I do the usual call outs, if you are someone who is struggling, you have to speak up. I think we probably touched on it enough here, but in case you need it said to you directly, if you are hearing or heard any of that and realize that any of that sounds like you, you have to tell someone. It doesn't have to be a therapist. It can just be someone that you trust, a friend. It needs to be someone that you trust. And if you don't have that, you can call the crisis line at 988. They will get you connected with someone. The Veterans Crisis Line is also through that phone number. They will get you connected with the VA as well for follow-up services and everything like that. But outside of that, with the usual, if you've been listening for a while and haven't already, please leave a rating and review for the show wherever you're listening and then share this episode around with another curious mind who needs to hear it.